Hare Krishna, dear devotees. It's my great honor and privilege to be able to speak today from Srimad Bhagavatam. And I'm grateful to whoever's given me this opportunity. I offer my respectful and humble obeisances to all of the devotees in the temple room at Bhaktivedanta Manor, and all of the devotees who are currently online on Zoom or live on YouTube. So today we will be, and obviously I do humbly request all of your prayers and your mercy that I will be able to say something or speak something worthy of this greatest of all literatures, Srimad Bhagavatam. So today we continue to read from the first canto, chapter number 19, entitled The Appearance of Shukadev Goswami. And we will be reading text number 9 and 10. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. From different parts of the universe, they arrived great sages like Atri, Javan, Sharadvan, Arishtanemi, Bhrigu, Vashishtha, Parashara, Parasara, Vishwamitra, Angira, Parashurama, Tatya, Indrapramada, Vidvamaho, Medatiti, Devala, Arshtisena, Bharadvaja, Gautama, Pipaladha, Maitreya, Orva, Kavasa, Kumbayoni, Vaipanya, and the great personality, Narada. So there's a long purport, which we shall now read. So Srila Prabhupada now explains the different personalities. So there are about 25 different personalities who are listed here. Srila Prabhupada goes into an explanation of about 13 of them. Srila Prabhupada does not explain each of the personalities. So we'll read the purport. So the first personality is Chavan, a great sage and one of the sons of Bhrigu Muni. He was born prematurely when his pregnant mother was kidnapped. Chavan is one of the six sons of his father. Bhrigu. When Brahmaji was performing a great sacrifice on behalf of Varuna, Maharishi Bhrigu was born from the sacrificial fire. He was a great sage, and his very dear wife was Puloma. He could travel in space like Durvasa, Narada, and others. And he used to visit all the planets of the universe. Before the battle of Kurukshetra, he tried to stop the battle. Sometimes he instructed Bharadvaj Muni about astronomical evolution. And he's the author of the great Bhrigu Samhita, the great astrological calculation. He explained how air, fire, water, and earth are generated from ether. He explained how the air in the stomach works and regulates the intestines. As a great philosopher, he logically established the eternity of the living entity, Mahabharata. He was also a great anthropologist, and the theory of evolution was long ago explained by him. He was a scientific propounder of the four divisions and orders of human society, known as the Van Ashrama Institution. He converted the Kshatriya king Vitha Avya into a Brahmana. Vashishtha, see Srimad Bhagavatam 196. So 196 is the ninth chapter is the passing away of Grandfather Bhishma in front of Lord Krishna. And in that verse, there's a long list of sages who also gathered. to be there at the passing away of Bhishma. So Srila Prabhupada is not repeating what he has mentioned previously in that verse, in the purport to that verse. Parashara. He is the grandson of Vasishtha Muni and father of Vyasadeva. He is the son of Maharishi Shakti. And his mother's name was Arishati. He was in the womb of his mother when she was only 12 years old. And from within the womb of his mother, he learned the Vedas. His father was killed by a demon, Kalma Shaphada. And to avenge this, he wanted to annihilate the whole world. He was restrained, however, by his grandfather, Vasishtha. He then performed a Rakshasa killing Yajna. But Maharishi Pulastya restrained him. He got Vyasadeva, being attracted by Satyavati, who was to become the wife of Maharaj Shantanu. By the blessings of Parashara, Satyavati became fragrant for miles. He was present also during the time of Bhishma's death. He was the spiritual master of Maharaj Janak and a great devotee of Lord Shiva. He is the author of many Vedic scriptures and sociological directions. Gadi Sutta or Vishwamitra. A great sage of austerity and mystic power. He is famous as Gadi Sutta because his father was Gadi, a powerful king of the province of Kanyakubja, part of Uttar Pradesh. Although he was a Kshatriya by birth, he became a Brahmana in the very same body by the power of his spiritual achievements. He picked a quarrel with Vasishtha Muni when he was a Kshatriya king and performed a great sacrifice in cooperation with Maganga Muni, and thus was able to vanquish the sons of Vasishtha. He became a great yogi, and he failed to check his senses, and thus was obliged to become the father of Shakuntala, the beauty queen of world history. Once when he was a Kshatriya king, he visited the hermitage of Vasishtha Muni, and he was given a royal reception. Vishwamitra wanted from Vasishtha a cow named Nandini, and the Muni refused to deliver it. Vishwamitra stole the cow, and thus there was a quarrel between the sage and the king. Vishwamitra was defeated by the spiritual strength of Vasishtha, and thus the king decided to become a Brahmana. Before becoming a Brahmana, he underwent severe austerity on the bank of the Kaushika. He was also one who tried to stop the Kurukshetra war. Angira. He is one of the six mental sons of Brahma and the father of Brihaspati, the great learned priest of the demigods in the heavenly planets. He was born of the semen of Brahmaji, given to a cinder of fire. Bhutatya and Samvarta are his sons. It is said that he is still performing austerity and chanting the holy name of the Lord at a place known as Alokananda on the banks of the Ganges. Parashurama, see Srimad Bhagavatam 196. Uttatya, one of the three sons of Maharishi Angira. He was the spiritual master of Maharaj Mandhata. He married Bhadra, the daughter of Soma, Moon. Varuna kidnapped his wife Bhadra, and to retaliate the offense of the god of water, he drank all the water of the world. Medatiti, an old sage of yore, an assembly member of the heavenly king Indradev. His son was Kanva Muni, who brought up Shakuntala in the forest. He was promoted to the heavenly planet by strictly following the principles of retired life, Vanaprastha. Devala, a great authority like Narad Muni and Vyasadeva. His good name is on the list of authorities mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita when Arjuna acknowledged Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He met Maharaj Yudhisthira after the Battle of Kurukshetra, and he was the elder brother of Domya, the priest of the Pandava family. Like the Kshatriyas, he also allowed his daughter to select her own husband in the Swayamvar meeting. And at that ceremony, all the bachelor sons of the rishis were invited. According to some, he is not the Asita Devala, Bharadvaja. See Srimad Bhagavatam 196. Gautama, one of the seven great sages of the universe. Sharadvan, Gautama was one of his sons. Persons in the Gautama Gotra dynasty today are either his family descendants or in his disciplic succession. The Brahmanas who profess Gautama Gotra are generally family descendants, and the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas who profess Gautama Gotra are all in the line of his disciplic succession. He was the husband of the famous Ahalya, who turned into stone when Indradev, the king of the heaven, molested her. Ahalya was delivered by Lord Ramachandra. Gautama was the grandfather of Kripacharya, one of the heroes of the Battle of Kurukshetra. Maitreya, a great rishi of yore. He was spiritual master of Vidura and a great religious authority. He advised Dhritarashtra to keep good relations with the Pandavas. Duryodhan disagreed and thus was cursed by him. He met Vyasadev and had religious discourses with him. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadanti Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yata Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitam Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna, Karuna Sindhu, Dina Bandhu, Jagatpate, Gopisha, Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta, Namastate. Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi, Radhe Vrindavateshwari, Vrishabhanu Suti Devi, Pranamami, Hari Priye. Vanchakalpa Turubhyascha, Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha, Patitanam Bhavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo, Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shri Vashari Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Ashtacha Vishatadine Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So this is a wonderful verse. It lists down the names of many great and famous sages and rishis. When I was reading this verse last night and going through all of the verses, I was remembering a story that my Guru Maharaj Giriraj Swami once told. He said in 1969, in the temple in Boston, America, the temple was once attacked by some hooligans. They broke the windows with sticks, came in with chains, they broke different parts of the temple, and they attacked the devotees. Fortunately, the devotees called the police, and the police came, and obviously the hooligans tried to run away, but a few of them were arrested. And then the case was taken to court. And when it was taken to court, different devotees were called to testify. And one of the devotees who was in the temple at the time was Nanda Kishore Das. And Nanda Kishore Das was a very simple, humble, meek, and timid devotee. So he was called up to the stand by the judge to testify. And the lawyer who was representing the hooligans, he was very, very aggressive. And seeing that Nanda Kishore Das was a bit timid, he was trying to intimidate him. So his first question to Nanda Kishore was, who was in the temple when it was so-called attacked by the hooligans? So Nanda Kishore thought for a while. He said, well, there was Satswarup, then there was Murari, then there was Madan Mohan. And in this way, he started to list all the names of the different devotees. And as he was listing the names, he started to gain spiritual strength. And then this aggressive lawyer attacked again. His whole strategy was to discredit the devotees and make it seem like the devotees were fanatics, they were a cult, and they were worshipping. He said, you worship Krishna. He's a Hindu god of love and practices infidelity. And Nanda Kishore Prabhu, having recited all of these devotees' names, who obviously are names of Krishna, he was feeling a bit stronger. And he said, my lord, can I quote my authority? And the judge said, yes, go on. And he said, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satidananda Vigraha Anadir Adi Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. That Krishna, he is the supreme personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes. He has an eternal body full of spiritual bliss and knowledge. And in this way, he established the supreme position of Lord Krishna on the authority of the Brahma Samhita. I remember the story because all of these wonderful names of these great rishis, devotees, and sages, when we recite these names, we get spiritual strength. So it's wonderful that Bhagavatam has listed all of these names, and we get the opportunity to also recite these names. So the context of this verse is, as we've read yesterday, Maharaj Parikshit, having received the curse, left his kingdom and walked towards the banks of the river Ganges. And then he had sat down, deciding to fast without drinking any water or eating any food, and to spend his last days perfecting his life. And it so happened that this news spread. It spread to not only all parts of this planet, but as explained in this verse, it spread to all parts of the universe. Now, this is something very mystical. Today, when we want to spread any news, we have the cyberspace. Little messages go and emails go and social media goes and all of that. And here we see, you know, all of these great sages in all parts of the planet, all parts of the universe, they receive news that this is taking place. Maharaj Parikshit is now decided to fast and leave his body, having been cursed. So how do we understand that, how instinctively, intuitively, these different great personalities throughout the world got this news and they arrived at this holy place, even without any satellite navigation, any satellite phones, or any of that? The word is, interesting word when we speak about that is instinctively. So, what do we understand by this word instinctively? A grace, Govinda Dasi, a very intimate and confidential servant of Srila Prabhupada, in one video, you can see this on YouTube, she recites a very nice pastime with Srila Prabhupada, where Srila Prabhupada gave focus on this word instinct. So Govinda Dasi recites in this video that Srila Prabhupada was in Hawaii, and every day Srila Prabhupada would go for his walk on the beach. And one day they would take the walk, on the beach there were these little white crabs. And as the devotees would walk toward the beach, you would observe these crabs would scurry across sideways on the seashore and jump into their hole. And Srila Prabhupada was observing this. And actually for days upon days, Srila Prabhupada went on speaking about these white crabs. But not only about the white crabs, but something very specific about the white crabs. And Prabhupada was saying, how is it that these crabs, they just run across and go into the hole to avert danger? And Prabhupada said, these scientists, they use the word instinct. But if we look at the Vedic literatures, there is no such word as instinct. So Prabhupada asked the devotees, so they speak about instinct. Can you explain what is this instinct? And the devotees thought about it. And if you go into the dictionary, there's a very interesting definition of instinct. Instinct, it says, an inborn impulse or motivation to action typically performed in response to specific external stimuli. Today, instinct is generally described as a stereotyped, apparently unlearned, genetically determined behavior pattern. But if you really analyze in detail, what is this word instinct? Actually, you will see it's got no meaning. It's got no meaning. It's just a word. And Prabhupada said they use this word just to cover up that there is a God, just to cover up that there is a super soul, just to cover up that there is past experience. And Srila Prabhupada, when he was drilling home this point, he looked at Govinda Dasi one day in the temple. And he said, you can see the privy. Prabhupada used the word privy for bathroom. And he said, say, suppose you come into this house after 20 years. you walk into this house, immediately you will know where the privy is. Why is that? It's because of past experience. It's because of past experience the baby knows how instinctively, from past experience, to suck on the nipple of its mother. The bird knows how to fly from past experience. And Prabhupada says, more importantly, the living entities are being guided also by the super soul. And by the guidance of the super soul, the living entities are able to perform various actions. So this instinct, Prabhupada said, is simply a nonsense that's been conjured up by the scientists. I know recently, I've been putting some prasadam out in our garden, for the different living entities. We have two squirrels that come regularly to our yard. There is some magpies, some robin, some blackbirds, and some pigeons. And I'm always amazed that the moment I put the prasadam out, from nowhere, the magpie will simply appear. And a robin will come. And the pigeons are there. And before you know it, the squirrels are also there. And normally you would not see the magpie around. Somehow or the other, by the direction of the super soul, these living entities are directed. So in the same way, in the absence of cyberspace and the absence of satellite phones, these great rishis who are in touch with the super soul, they were directed. They were directed to this place. And the super soul was directing them for a few reasons, which we will speak about a little later. So all of these great sages and saints, they arrived in this place called Shukratal. It's interesting, this very place where Shukadev Goswami spoke to Maharaj Parikshit, this is a place that one can visit. It's a village called Shukratal, and it's about halfway between Delhi and Haridwar along the route of the river Ganges. And it is said, in terms of specific locations, there is a city by the name of Muzaffar Nagar. And half an hour east of this city called Muzaffar Nagar, one can go and one can find this place called Shukratal. And there, when you go to Shukratal, you can see there's a place called Sukhtirth, which is the place of the ashram of Shukadev Goswami. And there's also a tree which is 5,100 years old, called the Akshay Vriksha tree, which one can visit. When I first read about this place, Shukratal, I've developed a desire to want to go there. So hopefully, by the mercy of the Lord and Guru and Gauranga, we can go there. Maybe one day we can all plan a trip and go together to this wonderful holy place of Shukratal. So here we see these great sages, these great personalities. They are described in the previous verse as Anubhavaha, great minds, as Munaya, thinkers. And Bhagavatam describes this, that these personalities are walking places of pilgrimage. So all of these great personalities, together with their disciples, they arrived at this place it says here, on the plea of making a journey to a place of pilgrimage. But Srila Prabhupada says, no, these sages, they are already walking places of pilgrimage. So they did not go there for pilgrimage, but they went there for some other reasons. One of the reasons given in the previous purport for the Prabhupada is they went to purify that place. It says the holy places, Prabhupada says, are inhabited or visited by many people who deposit their sins there. And when the holy people go, they also remove the sins. Recently, I was having an experience of a devotee who is about to leave a body. And one devotee, a sannyasi, went to instruct this devotee and a family. And one of the first things they said is that one should leave one's body in a very pure and clean place. So the sannyasi instructed the devotees to take out all of the clutter and clean everywhere with cow dung and cow urine. And when that place is so clean, it creates a very nice atmosphere. So Maharaj Parikshit sat down. And one of the reasons, or one of the, is the Lord directed these sages. Immediately the whole place became completely sanctified by these sages being there. Another reason, or two reasons given why the sages arrived. One reason is to give Maharaj Parikshit their association. And the other reason is to take his association. So Krishna is, the Lord is very merciful to his pure devotees. When pure devotees are about to leave, the Lord will make wonderful arrangements for such devotees to get the association of other devotees. And we all know that the purpose of the human form of life is to be able to remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead at the time of death. And there are no better ways to remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead than being in a sangha, a satsanga of great devotees, great personalities. So these great personalities, wanting to be merciful to Maharaj Parikshit, being guided internally by the super soul, by the Lord, they arrived. And secondly, they also wanted to take his association. Maharaj Parikshit was a great personality and a great devotee. And these sages, they were aware that what was going to take place is the greatest listener was going to meet the greatest speaker. And unknowingly, they formed the greatest audience. And this is what makes Srimad Bhagavatam, one of the reasons it makes Srimad Bhagavatam the greatest of all Vedic literatures. Because it was spoken in the perfect environment, the perfect listener, Parikshit Maharaj, the perfect speaker, Shukadev Goswami, and the perfect audience, all of these great rishis, spiritual masters, and devotees were present. So here we have the coming together. And simply, if one wants to analyze what is the greatest literature, simply on these, leaving aside all of the other great aspects of Srimad Bhagavatam, simply on the basis of these three items, Srimad Bhagavatam is the greatest literature. So we see this wonderful arrangement being made by the Lord for his great devotee, Maharaj Parikshit. Now, there's some other very interesting aspects of the gathering of these sages. So we will read in subsequent verses that all of them arrived. And when they arrived, the first thing that they did was they sat down. Maharaj Parikshit was sat, waiting to be instructed. There was a seat that was available for the speaker. And all of these great personalities mentioned here, they sat down. Now, it's very interesting, and I would like to recite one story I heard from His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, which gives some insight into the consciousness of these great personalities and why it is deemed that they were such a great audience. So Radhanath Swami Maharaj, he recites an example from his own experiences in life. Those of us who have read the wonderful book of Maharaj, The Journey Home, we know that Maharaj speaks about how in 1970, he traveled from Europe across Afghanistan, Turkey, Pakistan, and then finally he arrived in India. And when he arrived in India, it so happened that one of the first places he landed up was in Delhi, Old Delhi. And when he landed up in Delhi, there was an international conference that was taking place. And this was entitled the International Conference of Yoga. And in attendance at this conference was all of the renowned, great yogis, spiritual masters, rishis at that time. And it was in a very, very big venue. And in this venue, there were different rooms. And this was a conference for 7 days. So every day, there would be different speakers in different rooms. And Maharaj was saying that how every day he was going to a different room to hear a different teacher speak. And as we would know from our experiences, that each of these teachers, they have their own philosophy, their own interpretation of what is the highest path, their own interpretation of what the scriptures are saying as the highest path. So Maharaj was going every day to different rooms and he was hearing from these different speakers. And every time he would hear, he would become more and more confused because they were apparently speaking from the same source, but they were giving different conclusions. Anyway, this went on for 6 days. And on the last day, they had everyone come together in one hall. And the convener of the conference, Maharaj gives his name, but I can't remember it now. Anyway, he was a Westerner. And he had made this wonderful arrangement of this International Conference of Yoga and invited all of these great personalities. So he went on stage and he said that today on the finale, on the final day, we are going to get 40 of these great thinkers, these great sages, these great spiritual masters to speak. But there's only one problem. This big hall, it's already been pre-booked. So we've only got 2.5 hours to conduct our different speeches before the next people who are booked are coming on. So he said, please, I request all of the speakers to not speak more than 3 minutes. This is my humble request. If you not speak more than 3 minutes, then everyone can get an opportunity. So he called the first speaker to speak. And he spoke for 10 minutes. And just by speaking for 10 minutes, the people at the end of the list, they also already got dropped off. And they started to become agitated and angry. So the second speaker came on. He spoke for 15 minutes. And more people were crossed off the list to speak. And there was more agitation. Because everyone was just waiting to speak, to assert themselves as some great authority, and to get adoration and followers. And then the third speaker came on. Even sometimes it happens with us, but it happens for different reasons. The devotees, when they are called upon to speak, their hearts are full of bhava, spiritual ecstasy and emotion. So when they speak, 3 minutes is not enough because there's just so much of bhava there that they just want to glorify the Lord and his devotees. But those who are not devotees, when they speak, one of the reasons they speak is because they love the sound of their own voices. They just love the sound of their own voices. So many of them were in that category. So the third person who spoke for 20 minutes, he really raised the agitation to another level. And the convener was imploring the speakers, please, I humbly request you, don't speak for more than 3 minutes. But there was nothing doing. So eventually it became very chaotic. And the person who was speaking for more than his allocated time, people started to shout at him. They started to shout at him, stop speaking. Just give it to the next speaker. And this person who was speaking, he started to get more angry. He says, don't you know who I am? I am Bhagavan. I am God. So you should be, consider yourself very fortunate that you're able to hear me. And you should give me as much time as I want to speak. But there were many other people there that considered themselves Bhagavan. So these different Bhagavans got into a fight. They got into a fight about who wanted to speak. And eventually one brave personality jumped onto the stage, pulled the mic out, and said, you know, we understand you're all great personalities and you all have something to say, but we should not fight. And Maharaj says he was in the audience and he was seeing this going on. He was just aghast. You know, what is going on here? And then Maharaj relates that this is the difference when you are in an audience or you are in a group where people are envious at heart. And where you are in a group where people are non-envious, you have a different outcome. All of these great rishis, they sat down with no, because they had no envy in their heart, no one had this expectation that they should be the personality that should be sitting on the Vyasasan speaking. When Shukadev Goswami, we see later on when we read, when he arrived, wholeheartedly, they gave the seat to Shukadev Goswami. No one was thinking, you know, I should be the one that's sitting there instructing Maharaj Parikshit. All of them were there in the consciousness that they simply wanted to hear. Once I had a very funny encounter with our dear Kaveri Prabhu. I'd given class, Bhagavatam class at the manor. And then I went to take breakfast and Kaveri Prabhu was there. And he said, Vrindavan Chandra, that was a very nice class you gave. I said, thank you, Prabhu. And he said, do you know how I know when a class is good? He said, do you know? I said, no, Prabhu. He said, when I feel envious, I know that is a good class. And I laughed at him. And obviously, he was saying that in jest because that's not his consciousness. But those who are non-envious at heart, you know, when they sit to hear, they never think, oh, I could have said that. I could have given a better explanation of this verse. They just go there, sit and hear. And recently I was listening to, the glories of Pankajangri Prabhu. You know, we know that Pankajangri Prabhu, there's a great loss to all of us that he's left, left us in his presence and he's gone back to the spiritual world. But the devotees who were glorifying Pankajangri Prabhu and Jananivas, they would say that every day for the English Bhagavatam class, no matter who was speaking, whether it was, someone fairly new in Krishna consciousness, someone who was not a very distinguished speaker, they would always come and sit in that Bhagavatam class and hear with rapt attention. Because they were non-envious by nature. They were non-envious by nature. So here we see this great assembly of rishis and spiritual masters. They came with this non-envious mood and mentality. And thus they formed part of the perfect audience for this Bhagavatam to be spoken. The Srimad Bhagavatam to be spoken. And we know that Shukadev Goswami, he heard Bhagavatam from his father Vedavyas. So his spiritual master was Vedavyas. And Vedavyas' spiritual master was Sri Narada. So Sri Narada was the Param Guru of Shukadev Goswami. But none of them considered, I'm Guru. I'm Param Guru. I should not be sitting and listening. They all sat there with this wonderful consciousness. And it is explained, Vyasadev explains in one of the Vedic literatures. He says that he had heard Srimad Bhagavatam. And he had compiled Srimad Bhagavatam. But when he was hearing Shukadev Goswami Shri speak Bhagavatam, it was as if he had never heard it before. Never heard it before. It was so relishable. And when one enters such a sangha and hears, that is the effect. The effect. And in the Bhagavatam, we know there's the famous verse, Srinvatasvara Kapa Krishna Punyasavana Kirtanam Nidayantasto Abhadrani Vidanoti Surat Satam. That when the Lord notices a living entity or someone who has this eagerness to hear his message in this pure consciousness, it becomes very, very pleased. He becomes very pleased and he personally enters the heart of such a devotee and cleanses the heart of such a devotee of anything unwanted that may be there. So Krishna is certainly pleased when we hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Sometimes we hear Bhagavatam class is going on and we think, oh, it's too far. Manor is half an hour away. Manor is 15 minutes away. I'll hear it online. But these sages, they traveled from different universes with the eagerness to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. I'll just finish off with one story about how Krishna is pleased with the devotees that have this attitude. Once in Vrindavan, there was this one devotee. He was hearing Krishna Katha. And he was just relishing Krishna Katha. And whenever there was Krishna Katha, he would always be there to hear and relish. And his mood pleased Krishna very much. So one day, there he was in a katha, hearing, relishing, when he sees someone tap his shoulder. He feels someone tapping his shoulder. So he turns around and he looks. And lo and behold, who's tapping his shoulder? It's Lord Krishna himself. And Krishna tells his devotee, you know, I'm just so pleased with you. I'm just so happy with you. You have this thirst, this eagerness, this hunger to hear my message. I want to give you a benediction. Please, you just tell me whatever benediction you want, I'll grant it to you. And the devotee looks at Krishna and he says, well, that's wonderful of you, my Lord. But can we discuss this a bit later? You know, this katha is so nice. I want to hear this, and then later we can talk about what you want to give me. So this is the nature of the devotees of the Lord. Where there's Krishna katha, they will always be there. In the right consciousness, one can drink the nectar of Krishna katha. And then we see this in this verse. All of these wonderful great sages, these great souls have arrived to hear from Shukadeva Goswami. So it's 8:30 now. I'll stop here. See if there's any questions or comments that anyone may have or reflections.
Thank you so much, Prabhu. I'm surely all appreciating. So at the beginning, you brought this very nice point, how reciting the names of the sages is a source of spiritual strength. And honestly, I was curious to see what could be brought out, extracted from this verse. And it was a very, very beautiful introduction with this story in Boston. And then you gave a very also nice continuation with the term of intuition. How this intuition is actually an empty concept to cover the guidance of the super soul and the past experience of the living entity. And then you related that to the sages, how the sages were naturally called by the super soul to reunite and to hear Harikatha. And they are places of pilgrimage. And it was very beautiful vision also of this assembly of great Vaishnavas who are so eager to hear and so open-hearted, clean-hearted to receive and impart and allow the Lord to impart into their hearts the message of the glories of the Lord, which is being imparted by Sukadev Goswami. And then you finish by also giving us a sample of what is not right by telling us the story of Radhanath Maharaj, where this envy present in the heart blocks us to receive the truth and to imbibe Krishna consciousness. So if you could please maybe bring it a bit more clearly and maybe from another point of view, how can we personally in our modern lives, in our day-to-day life, become more receptive and more attentive in our hearing? Because it's so important. You already spoke so much about it, but if you could maybe just bring some points in a clear way. And there's no questions for the moment, okay. So that would be a few more minutes to understand. Yeah. How can we develop even?
I'm not sure if I can remember it correctly, but I'll try to remember it. And if anyone can add, please feel free to do so. I was hearing that there are three stages of hearing, or three types of hearing. The first type of hearing, it comes in here, and then it goes out. So there's no assimilation. It's simply, you know, the ears are open, So it is said that, you know, hearing both from in terms of chanting and hearing, you know, there's the connection between the ear, the tongue, and the mind. So the first type of hearing, it comes here and it goes. There's no connection with the mind. There's no shravanam, remembrance. So the second type of hearing is, it goes in here, it goes into the mind or the heart. The heart is a better word. And it is there. So it's a high type of hearing. But it is said the highest type of hearing, the best type of hearing is when it goes here, it settles in the heart, there's reflection, and that reflection ultimately ends up with smaranam, remembrance. So when proper hearing is there, when it really enters the heart, there is reflection. What we will have is smaranam. Like recently, we were hearing in Sutapa Prabhu's presentation of the Bhagavatam. We had the honor and privilege of Sachinandan Swami coming there to the class and speaking about the connection between Bhagavatam and the chanting of the holy name. And he said that there's a very intimate connection between the Bhagavatam and the chanting. And he said that when we hear Bhagavatam, and then when we chant, that proper hearing of the Bhagavatam will result in smaranam, remembrance. Because the ultimate, in one sense, goal of chanting is chanting will bring smaranam, remembrance of Krishna. So when we hear properly, that's the result. We will have proper smaranam. But that requires it to enter the heart and there to be some reflection and some thought and consideration of the message that's been heard. So yeah. Those are just some of my reflections, Prabhu.
Thank you so much. And I also noted in the few stories that you told before about Pankajangri that there were two points that you mentioned that allow the listener to imbibe that into the heart, which was the non-envious and to hear it as if they never heard them it before. Mm-hmm. So these two points also allow us to be receptive. If we think we know, or if we're envious, we're gonna block it.
Yeah, he said envy closes the heart, it closes the consciousness. When there's not, it's like it goes out to settle, there's got to be non-envy. Otherwise, the funnel, the route is closed. Envy closes it. But when envy is not there, then there's proper transmission. The whole hearing becomes greater.
Maybe we ask just a last question from Komal Mataji. I think she's in the temple room. And we are being asked, how can we use this envy in Krishna consciousness? How can we get rid of it, or how can we use it? And how can it be transformed into a competitive attitude of eagerness towards Krishna?
That's a nice question. I once was surprised to hear and read Srila Prabhupada said that even in the spiritual world, there is envy. And Prabhupada says everything we experience in the material world is a perverted reflection of what's there in the spiritual world. So there's also something called original envy. But Prabhupada said that envy is how to serve Krishna better. It's not from a personal perspective. So if we see someone maybe singing nicely, and in the material world, maybe we feel some envy. We should not feel envy from the perspective of, you know, I want to sing better so I can be acknowledged more than that singer. The envy can only be there if we think, I wish I could sing even nicer so I could give more pleasure to Krishna. So that is one perspective. And please, if anyone, there's some many senior and wonderful devotees are here. If you want to add or correct, please do. That's what I read and that's what I understood from Srila Prabhupada explaining about envy in the spiritual world.
Thank you so much, Vrindavan Prabhu. We are coming to time. It's 8:39. So we're going to end up here.